There are so many hypnotic techniques that we as hypnotists, be it coaches, be it therapists, be it stage hypnotists, use with our clients. There is the induction, there's the age regression, there is an effect bridge, there is tapping on the forehead, arm levitation. Some of you may even have seen the so-called cataleptic bridge. So many techniques are out there. Welcome to this episode of HypnoTalks Question and Answers. My name is Axel Hombach. I'm a hypnotist in Cologne, Germany, where I'm also giving classes in self-hypnosis. I'm right now here in London with Dr. John Butler, the head and director of the HTI, the Hypnotherapy Training International. Hello, John.
Hello, Axel, and hello to our listeners.
We've decided that we do a small series, a mini series on various hypnotic techniques. There Yes. are so many out there, and there are also a lot of techniques where exist a lot of myths
Yes.
and misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
We talked shortly about the tapping on the forehead, for example, only to name one of the many different techniques and many myths that are out there.
Yes.
In your about 40 years of experience now, you must have come across a lot of techniques.
A great many, Axel.
And with the contacts you have had, the teachers you have had,
mm-hmm.
you probably have had an insight into the techniques that we can benefit a great deal from.
Mm-hmm.
If you
mm-hmm.
share that a little bit with us.
I'm happy to do that. I think it's important to understand not only how to do the technique, but what it is aimed at. What is the purpose of that technique and how does it work? We often find in hypnotherapy trainings that the emphasis is on techniques. So that here is a technique you can use for X or Y, or if this technique is not working, let's get another technique. In fact, some courses, or particularly courses that are supposed to take your skills to another level. In other words, you've graduated and here's a sort of a kind of a specialist class, a master class even, and it's yet more techniques. And not necessarily the best techniques even. What's often lacking, in my opinion, is an understanding of what the technique is really destined to achieve, what it's designed to achieve, what it's going to do or may do. And then how does it work?
Yeah, what you are saying now reminds me of other trainings that I took that put a lot of emphasis in doing a certain technique in a certain way, and every little minute hand holding, hand movement, eye movement, head movement, etc., was very particularly and detail explained, but it wasn't necessarily clear what was to be achieved with that.
Yes, well, there can be an emphasis on mechanically doing a technique. This is the way you do it because this is how Dave Ellman or somebody else did it. And if you listen to Ellman's teachings, we produce those recordings still. We're distributors, the publishers for that. He always emphasizes he did not want students learning mechanically to become purely technicians, to copying the technique in that mechanical way. Often he would adapt it to the needs of the client. And so he wanted people to understand the thinking behind the technique, as he would say. The techniques are tools, just like a hammer and the chisel. We don't say the hammer, a chisel, and the saw created the piece of furniture. We say it's the craftsman, the person doing the work, and they use tools as necessary, as appropriate. So the skill is in the practitioner, and yes, they must have a range of appropriate tools, techniques, which are well developed, understood well, brought to a high level of expertise. However, they're still tools. And the energy, the person who's delivering the technique is more important in many ways. Techniques can be developed even on the spot, as many were, when dealing with a difficult client. Now, I know there's courses out there where students learn only one or two techniques of induction, or one technique for their supposedly get them back to trauma or sensitizing events. And really, that's very poor quality training. People have been missold in their trainings. If you understand about inductions, you realize there's 5 or 6 major principles, categories of induction. And there's maybe 3 or 4 more minor ones associated with those major ones for the most part. And then you can develop techniques from
If you understand the principles of inductions.
You can create new styles of induction on the spot even. And you can develop the same deepening methods and so on, and compounding methods.
And we are going into more detail about the inductions in the follow-up episode.
Absolutely, we'll leave that for the moment.
Where you explain the principles and how you can then develop on the spot if you understand what it is about. Absolutely. If you don't follow mechanically. And what you said about Elman, that he wanted that his participants, that they understand the principles. This is also what you can read in the manual that Gilboyne wrote, where he emphasizes over and over again in various chapters that it's not about the technique, but it's about that you always give the client what the client needs at that moment.
Yes.
Which refers to, if you know how techniques work, how the principles work, then you can develop a technique on the spot.
Absolutely. If you know how an eye catalepsy test works, what mechanisms are involved, neurologically, emotionally, belief, imagination, then you can adapt that. You can do many variations of delivering the catalepsy suggestion, the challenge, the testing of it, and so on. So this is very critical to understand. Of course, it's true of all learning. We find in expert learning the people, where it's in physics and music, who understand the deep principle, the deep structure. They are not technicians anymore. They can create technique, use technique wonderfully. If you think of Gilboy, he was a master of technique, as was Elman. But that came from understanding. And they never emphasized technique, as it were, the source of the success that produced the change. You could have 3 people, let's say 3 therapists delivering an Ericksonian or an Elmanian approach to the same client, and they'll all get different results, even if they're doing it word perfect, because of the belief in each practitioner, the level of confidence, expectation, so on. And that is conveyed at the subconscious level. So while we're not going to inductions, I'm using that as just one example. Just because you do the technique mechanically perfect, it doesn't create the same effect. In just the same way as there were many good technicians in music, in jazz, for example, but we don't hear much about them nowadays because their work really lacked a great deal of depth or soul or spirit, whatever you want to call the energy of the music. They were technically brilliant, but somehow the music was lacking.
That reminds me of some part of the New Testament, that as long as you don't have the love, your words are just hollow. I don't remember the exact words, especially not in English.
Yes, of course.
But I believe it was said by Paul.
Yes. That sentiment is there in many ancient philosophies and in religion. If you're just following the rules, the technical rules, you're not doing very much.
Yeah, and that then separates the technician from the master.
Absolutely.
And perhaps then the next level can be the engineer.
Yes.
An engineer has the overview of so many different surrounding applications, fields. He takes from here, from there, and then produces miracles.
That's right.
So, can you group techniques, or are there categories that you could put techniques into, so that they become maybe more accessible, that if we go into that pigeonhole, if we go into that shelf, that is more useful for this and that, or are there maybe something that makes it more graspable for some of our listeners?
Well, traditionally, of course, the techniques have been applied to the different stages and steps in therapy. And let's say at the hypnotic level, the hypnotic inductions, the deepening. And as I said earlier, a little bit about compounding, which is very important, is rarely taught in courses. And then methods to deliver suggestions. So the techniques and suggestions, the formulas we follow for generating good language. Yeah, so that's all important. However, you can also group techniques in other ways. But that's convenient for most purposes because most students are thinking in this mm-hmm. way. You know, I'm getting them into a trance now. What technique do I use?
Yeah.
Now I want to deepen it. What technique? And you saw me in the course last week talk about deepening methods, and I grouped them under about 7 major categories.
Yeah.
Right? We could break it down further. It says about 15 of them or more. And so you need to know how these work, what they are, first of all, at least a minimum about how they work, how they have their effect. And so that's the part that's often missing. So I'm always warning students, don't be misled by the idea that you will become a great hypnotist, great therapist, great hypnotherapist by learning more techniques or just training that's almost entirely based around technique.
And as you mentioned that, or what I understood, if you are beginning, it makes sense to learn a number of techniques that belong to a certain stage of the process.
Yes.
And then you learn the principles of that technique.
That's correct.
That you have maybe not a very detailed, but a more high level understanding how that works.
That's right.
And with that, you gain more and more experience. And the more experience you have, then you start to understand that how you adapt the technique to your client's needs.
Yes.
And also then how you can use it not only in a certain stage of the process, but apply it in other stages.
That's absolutely right. The student must learn something of a deep enough level of what that technique is designed to do, what it's actually producing, and how the client is responding or not so much responding to it, so they can take it from there. Otherwise, they'll simply be saying, oh, it's not working, and not understanding what's going on with the client's mind. That needs to happen for the technique to have its effect, and what the client may be doing to inhibit it. So they're really practicing, I often say, the kind of monkey see, monkey do level. I see a guy doing it, and I mimic his voice, I mimic the technique, and that's the level I'm working at. And maybe I'll stay like that for the next 30, 40 years of my career. We put emphasis on plenty of techniques, good techniques, but each of them is explained in sufficient detail for the student to get some grasp of. If you give them too much detailed knowledge of what's going on, a student can get very confused. It's a lot to absorb because some of this is quite deep. Anyway, the student needs to get onto that path to begin with. I'm learning sufficient techniques and I know enough about how they work, what they do, and how to work with it with that client when the client is not very responsive. So I can then adapt that technique or move to another technique. But at no stage am I believing that the technique is the critical factor, the critical element, the deciding factor in the client's response. No, there is the energy of the therapist. The therapist is more like the instrument. The therapists themselves are a high-level tool, if you want to call it that, for influencing the client. But that therapist's understanding, their energy, their creativity, that's what's going in to this experience, this joint experience of trance, which is created between two people. That's in a therapy setting. Of course, the client learns to do it for themselves with self-hypnosis. Freud said hypnosis is a society of two. A very deep interpersonal interaction. In the Ericksonian model, a multi-level communication going on, conscious to subconscious, subconscious to subconscious, and so on, so on. And so the therapist must be properly educated in the work to become competent and to be able to deliver a wide enough range of techniques to allow for maximum responsiveness with the client. As far as that, of course, the client being contributing at their side, their level of readiness for change, and so on and on. So there's a lot to understand here, Axel.
Thank you very much, John. We are already coming to an end with our first episode of our mini-series on hypnotic techniques. And as usual, how would you summarize what you've said into 3 to 4 sentences?
I would say, think of yourself as an artist. Hypnosis, hypnotherapy is an art and a science. And as an artist, you will have techniques like brushes. And you'll learn the techniques of drawing and sketching. You will learn a wide range of techniques and make sure you learn them from a competent person who delivers and shows you how it's working, shows you results. Then you must bring your creativity into it so your performance is alive and vibrant and you are not simply hollow and it's repetition of a technique in a mechanical way which produces very little subconscious change with the client.
Thank you very much, John. And I'm delighted to continue with you in our follow-up sessions on inductions.
Thank you, Axel. And thanks to our listeners again.